chapter 21. Been beginning to work our way through these good passages of Scripture that reveal to us God's righteousness and our unrighteousness. They reveal to us our need to be reconciled to God through a means other than anything that we can come up with. These laws were put in place for the regulation of just society within Judaism. It was through the breaking of these laws that the sacrificial system would then be administered. So these were the things that God was going to hold them accountable to, and He provided the sacrificial system to provide when they failed in these areas. Okay? So if they never failed in these areas, then there wouldn't have been a need for sacrifices. But they did fail in these areas over and over, and the sacrifices came over and over. This morning we'll talk about a couple of things that perhaps just cause us to say, what in the world? No way. I think we'll get to them this morning anyway. I want to tell you this. God didn't put anything in His law to introduce sin to anybody. So these were things that people were doing. These are things that people were acting on. Desires that they had that they were fulfilling, that God said, nope, not my people. I'm going to draw a line, and I'm going to say, in case, obviously, you don't know, you don't do that. And when they did, obviously, there were some penalties that we've outlined. There were sacrifices to atone for them. But God intended for this law to make them a distinct and unique people. That's what he intended it to do. And He intended it to make them long for the Messiah. Because this is arduous. You say, Matt, you can't tell us. We know because we've heard you reading it and blathering on about it. This was their life every single day. This is the book of the law. You live by it. You keep it. You do it or else. That was the law. So let's with that cheery note, let's jump right back in where we left off last week. And what we had begun to look at was God's laws regulating conflict within individuals. And we saw a lot last week about if people were fighting, somebody took someone's life, God provided punishment for outright murder, and He provided protection in the case of what we would today maybe call manslaughter or an accidental death. He provided for both of those. And this week, we start off at verse 22 with a unique situation, with a unique penalty that recognizes its uniqueness. All right. So, verse 22 of Exodus 21 says, if men fight and hurt a woman with child, so that she gives birth prematurely, yet no harm follows, he shall surely be punished according as the woman's husband imposes on him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. But if any harm follows, then you shall give life for life. Life for life. And so the scenario is laid out here pretty clearly. Two men are struggling. It's implied, or most people assume, that the scenario here would be two men were fighting. A woman with child is perhaps one of the men's wife, you know, and comes over to try to break up the fight, because guys can be stupid like that, and they need women to speak a little wisdom into their life. Maybe that's the scenario. Maybe it's two guys that are unrelated to the lady, and in their tussling, they run into her, and they cause her to go into labor and to give birth prematurely. It says, if no harm follows, the baby is born healthy, everything's okay with the baby. The mother is healthy, everything's okay with the mother. So there's still a penalty. And the husband, the father of the child, is to impose that penalty. He's to say, listen, this is the heartache that you caused our family. This is the danger that you put my wife and my son or daughter in. And I think that this should be the recompense for that. But then it would go to the judges. You remember those men that we talked about back in chapter, I think it was 18, 19, who were set apart to judge in the matters concerning Israel. They were set apart by thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Right? And so, However far up that rank this would come, to be able to look at the situation and say, listen, here's what happened. Everybody's okay, but because of your carelessness, you need to pay this amount right here. And so then that person would be obligated to do that and say, well, that's pretty simple and straightforward. But if harm followed, so if the mother lost her life, or if the baby lost their life, his or her life, or if both lost their life, then there's another punishment. And that was to put the individual who had caused this harm, this damage, to death. Now, this is a unique penalty because for no other accidental taking of a life is the capital punishment administered. Only this. Only when the life of the mother and the precious innocence of the womb is invaded with violence did God say, accidental or not, that's death. Period. That's what you do. So doesn't that put what we are doing in this nation in a very, very stark light? And I know that there isn't anybody here that doesn't already feel that that's a hideousness. But isn't it unique that 4,000 years ago in God's law, He said, this is a special circumstance, and when it is carried out, when it is damaged, when there is harm, I want you to take the life of the individual who harms that life. That's what I want done. Isn't that amazing? And today, and if you chose to consume the debates of this previous week or just listen to the spewing of the vomit of the political rhetoric that we hear day in and day out as people try to mischaracterize the murder of innocent children as something other than murder of innocent children, because that's exactly what it is, God says no. No, 4,000 years ago, in this uncivilized world, they knew, you don't do that. It reminded me of in Romans chapter 7 and verse 12, where Paul makes the comment. He says, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, he says, therefore, the law is holy, and the commandment is holy. And he says, and the law is just and good. The law brought justice. And God said justice in this circumstance was the taking of the individual who harmed the child or the mother, taking of their life. This also introduces us to the law of retaliation or retribution that was brought about under the Levitical system. Leviticus chapter 24, verses 19 and 20 says that if a man causes a disfigurement of his neighbor, as he has done, so it shall be done to him. Fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. As he's caused a disfigurement of a man, so it shall be done to him. And that applies to this, and then a couple of verses we're going to look at in just a second. The law was just and good. Remember that. But John, in his Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 17, he said the law came through Moses. But grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Christ, in His Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, verses 38 and 39, said, you've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I tell you not to resist an evil person, and whoever slaps you on your right cheek, then turn him the other also. God took the damage of life very, very seriously. And there was a price to pay for that because the law demanded justice. However, when Christ was on earth, He brought in a different law. Now, that doesn't change God's view of murder. The capital punishment mandate predated the law, was underscored in the law, and is reaffirmed in the New Testament. God intends to protect the sanctity of human life, especially beyond what He does for common assault and offense of individuals. He goes even beyond that in protecting life in the womb. Well, verse 24 and 25, it says, as we've just made reference to, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. And this was, if these conflicts took place within Jewish society, these were the way that they were taken. And you think about that, that administered, if you get in a conflict and whatever, you know, Chuck and John have disagreement over Camaros and Mustangs, they could probably have that disagreement And I don't know who would win that fight. Obviously, Chuck's got the preferred car, but the physical conflict that might follow, I don't know. But, you know, so somebody hauls off and slugs somebody in the eye, and the eye's damaged, and they lose the eye. God says, okay, you slugged him in the eye. Guess what? Now you're going to lose your eye, right? And so we see there, obviously, there's a punishment element to that. And then there's a wisdom that comes from, you know what? I'm not going to do that to them because somebody's going to turn around and do it to me. So God had a very practical sense of justice there, right? That's where it comes back into the new covenant when Christ says, you've heard it said, but I'm going to tell you something different. Rather, you bear that insult, you bear that assault, and you just turn the other cheek. Okay? So that's a new covenant change on that old covenant thought. There's a uniqueness even to this, though, for the slaves. Okay? So verses 26 and 27 deal with an individual injuring a slave. And this would have been a non-Hebrew slave. So this would have been the Jewish traditions would have referred to this individual as a Canaanite-ish person, someone who's a Gentile. So if you had a Gentile slave, here's what they say about assault on them. Verse 26 says, if any man strikes the eye of his male or female servant and destroys it, he shall let them go free for the sake of the eye. And if he knocks out a tooth of his male or female servant, he shall let him go free for the sake of his tooth. And so, between a master and a foreign slave, okay, so if it was a Hebrew, whether they were peers in society, or it was a Hebrew master and a Hebrew slave, we have the eye for eye, tooth for tooth rule. If it is a Hebrew individual and a foreign slave, if they're permanently damaged, they are permanently free. Whether it's their eye or their tooth or whatever it is, if a Hebrew master struck one of their slaves, damaging them permanently, the total loss of use of the eye, a knocking out of a tooth, whatever it was that was permanent, couldn't be healed, couldn't be fixed. We saw earlier regulation last week about beatings that were excessive, but if he just hauls off and clocks him and the slave loses the use of that, then they're free forever. Right? They get to go out and they don't ever get bound back in. And so that kind of wraps up the rules, the regulations, the judgments against within society. All right, and so these were the responsibilities that these men who were set aside had. So just about anything that happened would fall under this. They could go to this, they could reference it, and they could make a determination on what had taken place, and that determination would be considered just, right, and by the way, everybody accepted it. That was the other thing. Once they made the judgment, then you accepted it and you went on. And you didn't have any ongoing, festering conflicts. It was over, whatever they said. So, verse 27. Let's read verse 27. Let's read all the way down through the end of the chapter. 27 through 36. And we'll kind of deal with this all as one. 28, I'm sorry. One unit. So, if an ox gores a man or a woman to death, then the ox shall surely be stoned, and its flesh shall not be eaten. But the owner of the ox shall be acquitted. But if the ox tended to thrust with its horn in times past, and it has been made known to his owner, and he has not kept it confined, so that it has killed a man or a woman, then the ox shall be stoned, and its owner shall be put to death. If there is imposed on him a sum of money, then he shall pay to redeem his life whatever is imposed on him. Whether it is gored a son or gored a daughter, according to this judgment, it shall be done to him. If the ox gores a male or a female servant, he shall give to their master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. If a man opens a pit, or a man digs a pit and does not cover it, and an ox or donkey falls in it, the owner of the pit shall make it good. He shall give money to their owner, but the dead animal shall be his. And if one man's ox hurts another's, man's ox, so that it dies, then they shall sell the live ox and divide the money from it, and then they shall divide the dead ox also. Or, if it was known that the ox tended to thrust in time past, and the owner has not kept it confined, he shall surely pay ox for ox, and the dead animal shall be his own. So, some unique ways that the Jews applied this. It's obviously pretty straightforward. You get the idea. If your ox, because we all have one, somebody's walking down the road and you've got an ox that is a surly dude and he runs out, gores them with his horn, and they die. Here's the law. All right? We're going to go, we're going to take your ox, and we're going to kill it. And nobody gets to eat it. So you get total forfeiture of property. All right? Doesn't say what to do with it. They're going to discard it, put it away. Because you had that animal, maybe you didn't know he was like that. Obviously you didn't. But he killed somebody. So we're going to kill him and you don't get any benefit. You don't get to keep the meat. You don't get to have a church fellowship and grill him. You don't get to do any of that. That's a total loss. Now, if you know that that's a mean ox, and somebody has told you, hey man, that thing tried to gore me, he tried to hook me, and you don't put him up, right? And you don't confine him. Now, Jewish tradition, the way that they administered this was, you had 3 days to put an ox up that had attempted to gore someone. So within that 3-day window, you've got that amount of time to make whatever appropriate provision you need to confine that animal. Beyond that 3-day window, if you haven't kept your ox confined and he gores somebody, not only does the life of the ox forfeited, but the life of the owner. Okay, so they consider that essentially a premeditated or at least a willful negligence. You didn't really care. You were warned that he was dangerous. You didn't take care of him. You didn't provide confinement for him. And so for that, you lose your life along with his life. Obviously, servants' lives were not valued the same way as individuals' lives. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. So it said there that he could redeem himself financially. Okay? Whether a son or a daughter. And so this happens. The ox gores. He knew it. He didn't put him up, but he's killed this fellow over here, or this lady over here, or this son, or this daughter over here. And he says, listen, I don't really want to die. Is there an amount of money that I could pay you so that I don't have to die? And the value would then be assigned based on the individual standing within society. And so if he was one of the elders of Israel that was killed, there would be a high value on that. If it was his wife, his daughter, or his son, it would be a descending value based on who the individual was and the standing of the family within society. Then that case would be brought to one of these judges and they would say, here's the deal. His ox did this. The law says that he should be stoned. We're willing to take a settlement, essentially. And he killed Dad, and we think Dad was worth 80 shekels. The judge would say, yeah, that's about right. So you pay them 80 shekels, and then you can live and go. You're going to kill your ox, but we're going to call this thing square. And then the whole thing that we've talked about, it stops here. There's no more liability. There's nothing more. This deal's a settled deal and gone. And if it killed a servant, then that was a very quick and simple transaction. They paid 30 shekels of silver, which was the common value to buy a foreign slave, and then the deal was considered settled from there. The law regarding the pit, you think about our law today of attractive nuisance, right? If you've got a swimming pool, you've got a responsibility to prevent people from getting in that and harming themselves, drowning themselves, whatever. You have to take the initiative to do that. The same was there. And when you think pit, think well. So if they had dug a well, and if you think about this, back when Jacob was fleeing from Esau, when he first arrived at Haran, he got there and Rachel, was watering the flock, and all the shepherds were around there, and they said they were waiting for everybody to get there so that they could uncover the pit, right? So that's what they would do. That's how they would keep animals and people from falling in them. They would put something over it that required enough resources, men, individuals, to uncover that, and then they would all take part, they would use it, they'd water, then they would cover it back up. And so here's the deal. Listen, if you're not taking those provisions and protections, then God's going to deal with you according to that. Chapter 22 begins with laws dealing with theft. And so the eighth commandment, thou shalt not steal. It's pretty straightforward, but God even recognizes within that, people are going to break that, people aren't going to obey that, and so there are some provisions for different types of situations that individuals get into. So, verses 1 and 2 of chapter 22, if a man steals an ox or a sheep, and he slaughters it or he sells it, then he's to restore 5 oxen for the ox and 4 sheep for the sheep. If the thief is found breaking in, and he is struck so that he dies, then there shall be no guilt for his bloodshed. But if the sun has risen on him, then there shall be guilt for his bloodshed. He should make full restitution. If he has nothing left, then he shall be sold for his theft. And if the theft is certainly found alive in his hand, whether it is an ox or a donkey or a sheep, then he's to restore double. And so, if you're sitting there at home one night watching Jerusalem late night or whatever you're watching, and you hear something out at your barn, and you run out there and there's somebody trying to break in, and you strike them, you bludgeon them, or you strike them with a sword and they die, then that's just what they get for trying to break into your stuff. And that's the way God said that. Like, listen, you don't know what harm they're trying to do. That's the way that is. But if the sun comes up, if it's broad daylight is the idea there, and there's two things that this protects against. Okay? So this protects against you obviously murdering somebody who you see. Now you obviously know who's done the crime. It's obvious what their intentions are. It's in broad daylight. Obviously help is going to be more readily available for you. So you don't do that. You're going to bring him to the judges and they're going to work through what he needs to do to repay you based on what the law lays out here. But it also prevented individuals from suspecting someone having broken in the night before and going and finding them the next day and murdering them then. Okay? So it prevented you from taking someone's life, even if you caught them in the act in daylight, and it prevented you from going at a later date and taking their life at a later date as your idea of justice, just justice delayed. Verse 1, it has a couple of words there that we translate everything in English the same way. They are different in Hebrew. And so the idea there is, if a bull specifically is stolen, then you repay four from your herd, from your oxen. So the idea there is someone has came and probably taken your prize bull, and then they have to repay you four just from their herd. And the same is said of the sheep. If they come and they steal your ram, your prize ram, then they have to pay you four from their flock. And so the repayal could be a goat even or sheep. It could be a mix. So it's not four to one of something identical. He's just saying, listen, you're gonna have to at least get enough to have the value for that. If it's found in his hand, it's not been harmed, it's not been sold, then he's to pay you double. And so that is, he's to return yours, and he's to give you two more. Okay? So that was the penalty for someone who carried out a theft of one of their neighbors. And then we've got time to look at verses 5 and 6. So it says, if a man causes a field or a vineyard to be grazed, and he lets loose his animal and it feeds in another man's field, then he shall make restitution from the best of his own field and the best of his own vineyard. And if a fire breaks out and it catches in thorns so that stacked grain or standing grain or a field is consumed, he who kindled the fire shall surely make restitution. So we've got two ways that someone else's income source was damaged. Okay? So maybe you have a pasture there and you're not keeping your fences up, or you just decide, you know what, I think my animals will get fatter on my neighbor's pasture than on my pasture. And you knowingly, the idea here is, or maybe not, let them over into your neighbor's. And they see everything that's damaged, whether it's trampled, whether it's grazed off, whatever it is. Once they're separated, you come to the judges, and the judges will go out there and they'll make an evaluation. They'll go and observe the fields. They're going to see the damage that's done. And then they're going to go to your field, and they're going to select what is the best of your field or your vineyard. And they're going to say, all right, this year you're going to forfeit all the profit from this area here to him to pay back for the damage that was done. Right? And the same thing for a fire. A common way that they would clear land, briars and brambles and those type of things in that time was to burn them off. You're probably going to see a lot of smoke in the skies over the next few days as farmers are trying to get their wheat out and their beans planted. They're going to burn that wheat straw off. It's something maybe they don't always love to do, but when it's wet like it is, that's what they do. They have to be careful though, right? And if you'll ever go by and see a field, you'll see a lot of times, if it's not so wet that they can't get on there, they'll go out there with a tractor and an implement, and they'll work several rounds around the field to make a buffer so that they can stop the fire if they light the fire. So that if their neighbor's got the wheat next door, it doesn't just jump over in there and burn all theirs up, Right? And so that's what God is making a practical protection here for Israel and for the individuals who were farming. He says, and if the fire does this, then you make full restitution. You come and you make an evaluation. Hey, here's what was damaged. The judges will come out. Whether they would measure it off, however their standard of judgment was, they would go and they would say, all right, this is what you're going to forfeit to repay your neighbor for what was damaged because of your negligence and your carelessness. Right? As we look at these things, I will admit, I think, man, I'm going to teach a Sunday school lesson about burned fields. Most people probably can't apply that directly to their life this week. But what I think we do see is an example of God's expectation of our stewardship and our considerations of others. Yep. Obviously, God intended for us and for Israel just to be good neighbors, to take care, to live responsibly. If you've got something that could be a harm to someone else, you make sure that you put in the proper provisions and protections. We've got, to wrap up here, we've got a Rottweiler who's a great dog. And if this dog would harm anybody, don't take this the wrong way. I hope this dog would harm somebody if he needed to, but this dog doesn't seem very harmful. Okay? He's about the biggest doofus I've ever seen in my life. But people have an idea about Rottweilers. And so when they come pulling up and Butch comes running around the house, they pay attention. Okay? And we had some Jehovah's Witnesses stop by. And I have the dog by the collar and he was lunging. I promise you, he was lunging because he wanted to get over there and get petted. But anyway, that guy wasn't sure about that. And so he says, hey, says, is he mean? And I said, well, I wouldn't stick out my hand. And he said, no, I have a responsibility to protect my neighbors. I've got two big dogs that could do harm. I don't think they'd do harm, but they could if they wanted to. You weren't probably going to stop them. They're pretty big, and you have responsibilities too, within your community, to be a godly example. When they observe you, they see somebody who takes care of their stuff and who takes care of those who surround them. That's what I think we should consider from that, and then the underscoring that God cares about everything. Everything. Whoa, you lit that fire recklessly. No, you're not going to do that. He said, well, God, that's kind of a small thing. They could have figured that out. God said, I'm going to put it down. This is the way that this will be administered. God watches and He sees everything and He cares about everything. Father, thank You for this day, and I thank You for these individuals who've come today. Lord, we're excited about a fun day together. I pray that as we hear Your word proclaimed in the service to come, that it would be a challenge and an encouragement. I pray that as we sing together and rejoice in the music ministry, and I pray for a fellowship this afternoon, Lord, I just ask that You would watch over us. I pray that everything we do and say would be pleasing to You. In Christ's name, amen.